Good morning, everybody. So, this last several months, when I was helping, I was going through those boxes of memorabilia from my youth in my dad's attic, finding these great things from when I was 12 years old, 11, etc. I was reminded that I was fixated to some extent on a member of the Beatles. Because when I was a kid, people used to tell me I looked like Paul McCartney, you know. And I thought that was awesome. So part of my, I think there was one exercise in sixth grade where you were supposed to, we'd been studying Egypt, and you were designing your, I don't know, your mummy house or whatever, and you did it in the depiction of somebody, and mine was the yellow submarine version of Paul McCartney. That's my transition to my liturgical piece of music here for this morning. There was at least one song, and probably only one song, written by a man from Iowa that was recorded by the Beatles. You know what that was? He knows, yes. Meredith Willson wrote the musical, The Music Man. And there's a beautiful song called Till There Was You. The Beatles did that song. Okay. And so when I was in high school, actually, there was some sort of all-state, gigantic 500-member band that played at the high school basketball tournament. Meredith Willson came and directed us as, I think we did highlights for Music Man, appropriately enough. So, you know, how many degrees? That's sort of my claim to a song that the Beatles did. Meredith Willson directed me and 500 other high school band musicians. So, maestro. There were bells on the hill, but I never heard them ring. No, I never heard them call till there was you. There were birds in the sun, but I never saw. If it's early in the morning and we're singing in that key, I'm going to stay far away from the microphone. That's the part that can't go on the internet, okay, Jay? Right there. I'm going to say more about that song. Right now, I would just ask you to think of birds all around winging and bells all around ringing and love all around singing as I read you from Psalm 139. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from far away. You search out my path and my lying down. You are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, O Lord, you know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is so high that I cannot attain it. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and settle at the farthest limits of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light around me become night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The light is as bright as the day, for darkness is as light. Amen. And let us pray. What a privilege, God, to be here and be bathed in the prayers of the people in this room. What a privilege for all of us, God, to be bathed in your love and your grace. May all of that guide this morning. For this camp. Amen. So I know it's first thing in the morning. We're diving into musical theater. We're diving into a rich psalm. And right now I'm going to ask you to hang with me and dive into a little bit of theology. I've got some more stories, but stay with me just a little bit. There is a liturgical theologian named Alexander Schmemann. Orthodox theologian. And I was helping a friend teach a course some years ago and read this for the first time and dug into it a little bit, and it really changed how I approach worship and gave me something that connects to every day, really. And the basic idea is this. Schmemann was writing in the 60s. And he was critical. He was very concerned about the divide he saw in church life. And he comes from the Orthodox wing of the church, the Eastern Orthodox part of the church. But he was speaking to the whole church. He was concerned about the divide between so-called sacred and so-called secular. And he would critique, he did critique the position that would say, the world is all just what we see and what it is, that's it. The secular view. But he was just as critical of the so-called sacred folk, the church people, the spiritual people, for saying, well, there's the secular world out there, but here in our world, here in our church world, here in worship, that's where we're spiritual. And he criticized that because he says it's all a gift from God. All of life is holy. I think there's a song that one of the times I was here before, there was the dance creative, and we did this piece to the song, Everything is Holy Now. That's Schmemann. And he was trying to, he would criticize the critique and say, everything feeds us from God. And the phrase he uses is the fourth dimension. There is a deeper reality. To everything. There is a deeper reality to the world. Even our food. I mean, one of the big representative of the secular view is this person named Max Feuerbach, who criticized religion. He began his key piece by saying, man is what he eats, which is his way of asserting, you know, it's a secular world, it's material, period. And Schmemann uses that Feuerbach line and says, yep, man is what he eats, because God is feeding us. Everything is this gift from God. So that's a little bit of Schmemann, and he's not the only one to identify this deeper reality. 500 years ago, John Calvin said, creation is the theater for God's glory. And I know some of us have a dour caricature of Calvin, but I'm a Presbyterian, you know. I'm going to lift up the man. And his beautiful theology, really. And he says about nature in particular, nature is a shining garment in which God is both revealed and concealed. And the task then becomes perceiving, seeing, hearing. Kind of in line with that pulse I was describing last night, trying to get in tune with it. And in particular, seeing the fourth dimension, hearing it, sensing it. Another more recent writer is Annie Dillard. And she writes these beautiful essays. I'm sorry, I've got something in my eye as I talk about seeing and perception. I guess just Jesus was right about that, you know? Okay, I'll be careful. Annie Dillard writes about this experience, and Annie Dillard just puts all sorts of wonderful things from here and there together in her essays. And in one of these essays, she's talking about many people having certain operations. I think it was cataracts removed, so, and suddenly they could see after not seeing for a long time. And there's this one woman who's very disoriented by it, and she says, "What is that tree with the lights in it?" And it was just a regular, what we would describe as a regular tree on a sunny day, catching the sun in different kinds of ways. But she was just perplexed by this sight of tree with lights in it. And Annie Dillard writes, "I wanted to see that tree. I wanted to see that." And it is her pilgrimage almost to see that way. And she has an experience of finally seeing the tree. And she describes the moment. And she says, "It's as if I were a bell all my life and never knew it. And suddenly I was lifted up and struck." We have that capacity. Just like the world has this deeper dimension, and we have the capacity to see it and ring with it and sing with it and resonate and shimmer and shine the way Calvin talks about. We have that capacity. But there are days we don't feel it. This is not John Calvin or Alexander Schmemann. This is Burns, okay? And I think we can go into each day. And when we're on our spiritual game, we can sense that reality in all kinds of places. Now, there are some places that help us get it, even when we're off. You go into Notre Dame, it happened to be in France, you go into this incredible place, you can say, "All right, I'm sensing the holy here." But the key for me is not to think that God just lives in that beautiful building. God is also present in the Dunkin' Donuts down the street from my church. You know, God is also in the alleyways. I can go to the Grand Canyon or go to Angel's Landing in Zion Park and say, "Oh my gosh, this is holy." But God doesn't just live there. You know, God's in the projects down the street for my church too. And part of my task, if I could be presumptuous, our task, it is to get fit, spiritually fit enough to sense that, to have the eyes that see and the ears that hear, to perceive that. And of course, you're going to recognize Glenn Clark in this, right? This athletes of the spirit and getting fit and getting tuned up so that we can sense that. Annie Lamott is a very current writer, and I love what her stuff, I love her books and essays. Her most recent book is a little one about prayer, and it's, she identifies her three favorite prayers. The first one is, "Help me." The second one is, "Thank you." And the third one is, "Wow." And that's the prayer of seeing and hearing and perceiving and wonder. Wonder takes our breath away, she says, and makes room for more breath. Which is why we call it breathtaking. Now, I put out some essayists, some theologians, old and new. Let me dive a little bit back into the map of my life. Because there are moments where I feel the bell. And I mentioned one last night at a key time when I was 22 years old, out of college, wondering what to do next. Ended up in a little town in Kentucky and was in the valley there with not a lot to do, so I sat. I really, not because of my good intentions, but just because of the reality of where I was, it's what I think Alan was talking about yesterday. There was room. I had some room. And in that room, sensed and heard and said, wow. I think I'm blessed because my church gives me moments, lots and lots of moments, really. But I'm thinking of the communion table. And no, it's not time for that story yet. It's not time. That's another tease, I suppose. But it's amazing to me how much when I think of important moments, a lot of them are around communion. And there was a 4-year-old, and the mother was trying to bring him to church, and he was a rambunctious kid. And she still brings, actually it wasn't the mother, it was the grandmother bringing the 4-year-old, and she really wanted him here. And for communion, we always come forward and receive by tinction. And he was in the front of the line, he really wanted to come, and he had some of the bread, and he had some of the juice, and sat down, and then he was fighting with his grandmother for the rest of the sacrament, because he said, I want to go and have more, come on, I want to go have more. And the grandmother knew that he needed to wait, and all of us knew that that liturgically proper thing was for him, you know, not to do that. But in the end, quietly, maybe some of us know that he is saying something profound theologically, that we want more and need more, and feed us, God, feed us. And yes, we relented and we let him come up and have more. seconds, exactly. and then there's an adult who expressed the same thing. A dear, dear, important man in my church that a couple of you have met, named Arthur. And we have a broad mix of people in our congregation, including people with special needs and different places along this autism spectrum. And Arthur is a great gift to us, and he doesn't always have a filter in terms of what he says. And we were having, this was an evening worship time, evening prayer, and we had communion, maybe 15 of us there, and it's during Lent, the lights are dim, we're going around in a circle serving bread and the cup. And Arthur has it, and he said, oh, this is delicious. Again, for everybody to hear, and again, oh, so true. It is delicious. I think those are times you sense, for me, that I sense it isn't just, there is just something, there's a deeper reality. Now, I feel like being a parent offers that, and you know, there are a lot of parents here and grandparents. My kids are now on their way to becoming young adults, but I go back to when they were little, when it hit me in waves. And in particular, I'm thinking of the experience of being in the grocery store I think this happened with all of them. I'll start with the first one, which was Lizzie. And Lizzie is a little girl, you know, she's a few months old, and I'm propping her in the grocery store line, and it's a long line. And I remember a moment of being very aware that typically I would be in this line cursing the line. You know, I don't really want to look at People magazine. I don't want to look at the gum rack. I wish this grocery line would go longer. I wish the cashier would go faster. I really need to get on and do other things. But I have this beautiful baby staring me in the face. I really don't care how long the line is. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because right here, right now, in this very moment, life is smiling at me. Now, again, I think that's true always. But I'm not always tuned into that. I'm not always present to that. Not always fit and on my game. But my baby is helping me realize that there is life in the grocery store checkout lane. There is God. Lizzie did it a different way too. I mean, a couple years later, maybe she was three, I don't know. We read to her a lot, of course, and she was realizing that words were made up of letters. And letters are magical things. So yeah, they are. So you can put letters together and they make words, and she was kind of doing that in her own way. 3, 4, whenever it was. She was into words early on. And then we'd be driving in the car. She said, "Daddy, look, letters." Because you just drive along the streets of Boston, and of course there's stores, there's bulletins, there's billboards, there's signs, there's advertising, there's pretty much letters everywhere you look. And this was amazing. "Daddy, there are letters everywhere. There's life everywhere." And the kids, of course, children and special adults who don't have the same kind of filter that I have, kind of help us get that and see that and hear that. The best illustration for Shmeimon and the fourth dimension and the depth of life that God gives us, the best illustration for me comes from my youngest girl, Gracie. And again, she's about the same age, I suppose, 3 or 4. It's a magical age, I guess. And she loved waffles, still does. And even as a little girl, she had a ritual for that, and where she would tear them into pieces, put some syrup on them, and make a lake of syrup as well for these little pieces of waffle. Now, this was a morning when I'd already made them, kind of a lazy morning, and then she got up and came down. But I was busy with things, doing dishes or doing whatever, and she was independent enough to create her own breakfast station. So she got the waffle that had been made, and she tore it up, put it on her plate, created her puddle, her lake of syrup, pulled up the high chair. Now, she was at a point where she was just about ready to leave the high chair. She just about outgrown it, but she was still using it. So she put her plate on one part of the table, got in the high chair, put her legs on the table. So she's kind of reclining in the high chair with her legs on the table. She gets her plate of waffle and she announces, "Daddy, this is life." That's Shmeimon, okay? And if you weren't with me with the Orthodox theologian before, just think of Gracie as a 4-year-old announcing what life is. So I want to express this stuff and teach Shmeimon to my worship classes. And in particular, I would love these future worship leaders, pastors, to understand that pastoring and that worship in particular is a time for people to get better at seeing that dimension. Schmemann talks about the Eucharist and communion being a time when we are brought to the vantage point where we can see, get a glimpse of that deeper reality. Now, I know lots of folks have experience of worship where maybe it's doesn't feel that way, you know, and it feels dry. So I want my students to get excited about thinking about, think about worship, think about this holy vocation as helping folks practice. Seeing that. You know, sometimes people think that, that these pieces of worship are symbols of this or symbols of that. And I think, well, that's a way to think of it. I like the way the Benedictines thought about it, where every day going through, you know, doing these things were ways of becoming athletes in the spirit, of practicing. Practice as you get better at it. And what if we were to think of kind of worship as practicing, getting better at seeing that reality? So I was getting worked up trying to teach Schmemann to my students one year. This was a few years ago. One of the joys of my life is that on Wednesday I'll be doing some of this teaching, but on Thursday it's time to do something else in my job at church. And on Tuesdays, in fact, it's my job to teach an after-school theater program. That's something we do at our church. I used to have theater people come in and do it, and one year I didn't have it, so I stepped in and just taught it myself, and I thought, hey, this is kind of fun. And I've been doing it ever since. Well, a few years ago, as I'm trying to struggle with the students about really getting Schmemann, because I'm all jazzed about Schmemann and getting to the vantage point. That Tuesday, I was also trying to get my 5, 6, and 7-year-olds excited about The Music Man, okay, and teaching that song. And it hit me, I was the bell ringing, that, you know what? I think that's Schmemann too. That's sort of a fourth dimension thing too. And here's why. You know the story of The Music Man? Sort of. There's a con man, Professor Harold Hill, right? Goes into Iowa, thank you very much. Goes into a little town, because they're all dupes in Iowa, right? And is trying to get this little town, turn of the century, 100 years ago, get them excited about the need to have a band, okay? And he persuades them that you've got trouble here, and the trouble's because there's a new pool hall, right? Right, trouble. Starts with T, that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. Good, all right. Yes, right. So, yes. All right, we're going. And of course, if you got trouble in a pool hall, what you really need is a band, right? You need a band. And if you're going to be in a band, what you need to do is put up your money to order band uniforms. And that's the con, right? It's kind of because he's going to leave town after he gets the money. Or maybe he gets, what is it? The instruments, it's the instruments, right? Anyway, there's a con there. But people are on to him a little bit at first. At least some are. And the smartest lady in town is Marion the librarian. Right? Okay. and she figures it out. You know, she figures it out. But along the way, she's also noticing some things that are happening, right? Like the gossipy women. What's that song? Big Little Tickle. Who are very suspicious of art and literature and the librarian and Balzac, right? Well, they discover dance, right? And they do this beautiful dance. And the town fathers who got their own issues, well, they end up singing, right? And the boy, little boy played by Ronnie Howard in the movie, you know, affected by a death in his family, kind of, you know, sullen into himself, he gets excited by the trumpet, right? Good things are happening. And there's this moment near the end of the play, the musical, the movie, and Marion and Professor Hilder meeting at the Lover's Point, the bridge, whatever the place. And she says, I know your game, you know. I know what you're doing, but I don't care. Because along the way, this stuff has happened. And then she sings that song. Along the way, this has happened. And it's like this affirmation of faith. There were bells, but I never heard them until you came. There were birds winging, but I never noticed them until all this happened. There were roses, they tell me, right? I never noticed them. There was love. There was love in the air, but I never heard it till there was you. Now, if you're a church leader, what if that you were you? Or if you're CFO, or if you're just a pilgrim on the journey, let that you be you. If you're the one through your ministry and your life, whether it's the professional kind or the lay kind, whatever, that's helping people see and hear and smell and be in the fourth dimension. Shmaimon wants for us what Meredith Wilson is singing about, that we can sense that. And it's its own theological statement, by the way, that the crook is the vehicle for God. But I'm saving that for a different day. Don't lose sight of that. I have an exercise for us. Besides singing Till There Was You in a high key early in the morning. This one comes from Fred Craddock, great teacher of preaching and a very wise man. He grew up in Tennessee, or maybe it was northern Georgia, but Appalachian region. And I read in one of his, he has a book of stories as well as a book of good sermons. But in these stories, one of these stories, he remembers the old folks when he was a kid talking about a certain recreational activity. So again, this is in the country, Appalachian region. Usually on a Sunday afternoon after church. No TV, maybe some radio, maybe not. They would talk about marveling. Say, hey, honey, you want to go out and marvel? And that meant taking a walk and looking for marvelous things. Isn't that cool? Taking a walk, pre-internet, pre-TV, looking wherever for something that shimmered, to use Calvin's language, sparkled, shined, something that's beautiful. Tree, flower, bird, whatever, roses. Craddock remembers being on the porch, and his aunt saying to his uncle, let's go a-marveling. You know, that kind of that Shakespearean Appalachian thing, followed by the verb, you know. Let's go a-marveling. It is a great exercise. And it's about a certain presence in today. I'm reading something by Gregory Boyle, and I'll bring more of his work up before he's a priest in Los Angeles. But he quotes Thich Nhat Hanh. He says, our true home is the present moment. The miracle is not to walk on water. The miracle is to walk on the green earth in the present moment. The ancient desert fathers, when they were disconsolate and without hope, would repeat one word over and over as a kind of soothing mantra. And the word wasn't God or Jesus or love, the word was today. It kept them where they needed to be today. I invite you to consider trying out some marveling. And of course, this is kind of a sweet spot for CFO, right? I think you get this. And in fact, when I read about marveling, I remembered a time that I was, the example that came to me was being here at Winnie some years ago and taking, I think it was a little jog around one of the paths. And it must have been later in the week because, you know, I feel like what this week does to us is get us a little more fit, you know, as we become athletes of the spirit. And something that maybe I wouldn't have noticed on day one, I was able to notice on day four, say. And I had to stop my run, and that's unusual for me to notice things, but on this run, there was just this amazing, amazing spider web. And I just had to stop and behold, you know, marvel a little bit. And I came up here and shared that just as a way to begin a talk. And Jack went, hallelujah, because he had seen the very same spider web. So this is a sweet spot for you guys. You know how to marvel. But depending on what life is like, you know, outside, maybe it's good to remind ourselves. I know for me, it's what I need to do, to go out and marvel a bit. And I want to close with a story from this year. I mentioned yesterday that a tough part of this year has been my wife's diagnosis with cancer. There have been lots of blessings in this year. I'm not going to talk a lot about this. I feel like this is her story to tell. But I will say that as a family, we felt incredible prayers from all around the country, if not the world. We felt great support in our local community. We've been in Boston a long time. And so we had little pockets of community, my church, our church, of course, the school, the neighborhood, the places where Lorraine works, her coworkers donated time off, which was very moving and powerful to her. Her students at BU Medical School did incredible gestures and voted her to get this award for best teacher of the year and just a lot of really great things. But the story I want to share is from the beginning. I look at our experience with cancer this past year in two chunks. The first one was the diagnosis, which is just big and scary. And we took some time off. I kind of took space just to be in that. And the second part was really the treatment where you just get in and you work. And every one of us in our family, kids, Lorraine, me, all had our things to do. My son now does his own laundry. God bless him. I wasn't doing that when I was his age. And, you know, you just had to dig in. But I think the part that I'm never going to forget is the day after the diagnosis. And on a Friday night, or into the day Friday, she was awaiting the test result. And was going to have to wait for the weekend. And she called them on her way home from work and saying, I can't wait for the weekend. Please tell me. So by Friday night, we learned and knew that we had a journey ahead of us. That Saturday, I took a run. That Saturday morning, I did what I usually do, went along the path I usually go, and went through this park. And if you know Boston, it's in the Neponset area of Dorchester. It's called Pope John Paul II Park. And I go there often. And the things that were happening were the things that often happen in a fall morning in the park. There were kids playing soccer. There was a little fundraiser. A group had gathered and they were doing a walk around the path to raise money to help seniors. And they were doing it in honor of, Mrs. Frank, Barney Frank's mother, who is this noted she was a community activist. I worked with her one summer, this amazing lady. So they were doing it in her memory and raising money to do good things. And there were people giving food and water. And it was stuff that happens almost every weekend in Boston parks, at least in the, you know, in the good weather seasons. And I had to stop and weep because it was all so beautiful. I mean, it just kind of shimmered. I mean, there were kids. I mean, to see kids playing soccer, it's awesome. Now, how many soccer games have I seen with Nathan? You know, dozens, hundreds maybe. But that day, I was just tuned in a little bit different way. And part of that is thinking, is being scared and thinking, will Lorraine not to get to see as much of this? Or will I not get to see this with Lorraine in the same way? It's a time, and it was kind of a gray day, maybe kind of like today, but it was absolutely beautiful. I just felt overwhelmed with how beautiful this life was. And these people raising money for a neighborhood program, and children running around, and parents watching their children, and green grass, and then the Ponset River behind me, and the harbor over there. It was all achingly beautiful. And it hurt. I'm not throwing around the term achingly without thought. It hurt, but it was still beautiful. And it was a gift of that day, and even a gift of the diagnosis, I suppose, shaking me up just a little bit like a bell. And I could see it. May we see that today and tomorrow and in all the days to come. For God is in the highest places. God is in the low places. You search me and know me. Amen. Just the last part of the song. There was love all around, but I never heard it singing. No, I never.